Horeb had once been a soldier in the armies of Ramses III. Later, in Duat, he had been Pharaoh of Weset. Now, 47 years old, he was an adventurer. Duat was not as he had imagined it. 2 decades after he had arrived, he could admit to himself that Isabel was right, and this was not the land of the dead after all. This was a world of the living, albeit one in which things had gone catastrophically wrong. That gave him heart. Perhaps Duat was still there, and when he died, he might yet be weighed and judged and reunited with his long-lost people. He did not speak of such beliefs, because Isabel would mock him for them. Still, 2 decades of rationalism and science had not quite dislodged the religion of his childhood. When he arrived, he had not been the man he was now. Still a leader, but only of those he could unify with strength. Later, more had come because he was successful. Finally, a whole community because he was wise and just. He had been a man who knew nothing more than the ways he had been taught, though, and he had tried to make everything fit the Egypt in his head. He had made himself pharaoh, and thought of war and immortality and a tomb of stone. But everywhere he had turned, there had been Isabel. The Electric Eye of the Silver God by Adrian Tchaikovsky. Part 1. She was older than him, a grey-haired woman, darker than he, and strange of features, with metal set into her scalp and neck. He thought she was a magician, and she made herself his chief advisor because Weset needed her. There were 100 languages amongst his people, but Isabel could speak to all, and she could look into the eyes of a man and place a language in his head. Well, that alone made her indispensable. Then again, there was nothing he knew of farming, irrigation and engineering that she could not add to, and of medicine her understanding exceeded that of Thoth. Yet for the first 7 years of his reign, Horeb had gone to bed each night dreaming of killing her. She was constantly changing his world in ways that made him unhappy. She wore him down over 100 little points until the pharaoh was no more than the first amongst equals. And those equals were men and women. And they did not have to acknowledge the supremacy of the sun god if they did not want to, nor be born to a particular family. But Horeb had the fortune to be born into the most enlightened nation of its time, his own assessment. He had been able to weigh each word of Isabel and let himself bend when it was needed, because Weset was fragile and Duat was a terrible place of monsters and the wicked. Now Weset was a thriving town of 1,000, where everyone was fed, nobody got ill from drinking the water, children learned their letters, and the language of the Nile was known to all. 20 long years, and at last Horeb had passed power to the council and bade them look to the laws he had set down. And then he had taken up his sword and rifle and his closest followers, they who had fought off raiders and the mammoths and horse archers with him, and he had set off on an adventure. For Horeb had been a soldier once, and 2 decades of rule had left him hungry for that freedom which is denied kings. Isabel had come to him seeking aid. There was a quest fit for a mighty warrior such as he, or that was how he would have the scribes write it. In truth, it was just a favour for a friend. In his retinue, he took one who was wise besides Isabel. Kumara Devi, Devi to Horeb, was a scholar from a city named Harappa, which had risen and fallen before Horeb had ever been born. She had come to Weset with the mind of a scientist and had taught and learned many things. Her true joy, though, was the craft of entering and leaving places without the permission of their owners. In his campaigns to defend Weset, she had been his spy amongst the tents of the enemy more than once. In Horeb's retinue as well were 3 who were warriors besides himself, and chief of those was Achimait. Achimait was not truly one of his people, but in Horeb's mind she was a war beast fit for a pharaoh, for all that he knew she was a machine. Achimait was tended to by Tankhilda, the pale woman who had been a fisherman's wife in Norway before she came to Duat, but had demonstrated such a knack for artificing. Achimait was controlled by Hilda, and crewed by a creature they called the Clicker, because Isabel could not make it speak, though it had learned the tongue of the Nile, and Isabel could translate its thoughts. These were his army. A woman, a monster, and a battered Russian T-34 tank, named after the devourer of souls. Isabel herself was old now, and something had changed in the world which demanded her attention. Some sign had come to her, and she had chafed and fidgeted until they knew Waset would last, and Horeb could lay down the sceptre. And so, here they were, riding Achimait into the lands of the West at her request, for Horeb had grown to love her as an aunt, and value her as an adviser. We've done all we can, you and I. The town's as stable as it's going to get. It doesn't need me, and it doesn't need you. And I'm running out of life. She had seen how the thought upset him, and so she had added, "And when I do go, if you want to mumble that nonsense of yours over me, and treat my body how your people do, well, I won't be around to object. Not that I believe a word, you understand. Just covering my bases." She had been born thousands of years after the last pharaohs, and after the Greeks and the Romans who had succeeded them. She claimed to be older than he would believe, but all things end. Perhaps only Achimait and the Clicker would live forever. Perhaps not even they. Isabel's quest was to find something that fell from heaven. And it was true. Many things fell and burned, making each nocturnal sky a display of wonder. On clear nights, when there was little moon, the people of Waset would be up on their flat roofs, watching the flickering streaks of shooting stars and wondering at their meaning. Although Isabel never watched, and Horeb suspected she did not wonder either. There were many things she knew that she did not feel the need to share. They had ridden west for 29 days, taking them outside Waset's influence, and into lands Horeb had only heard tales about. Sometimes they sighted game, and Horeb would go hunting, away from the noise and metal stink of Achimait. If the game was too fast, they would let the Clicker loose, and it would bring them back meat without fail. The Clicker ate meat. The Clicker ate anything. Whatever hands had crafted it had made it well. But right now, it was hidden inside Achimait, which it preferred. Some part of it was still the ancestral creature that lived in a hole on the seabed and attacked from ambush. The T-34 had ground to a halt, looking down into a canyon where forest had grown up about great shattered ruins. In the distance, the stump of a tower stood proud of the green, but the rest of the city had fallen centuries before. "I had wondered," Horeb said dryly, "whether this errand of yours was to the city of the Silver God."
"Oh, you've heard of it?"
Isabel cocked an eye at him, the iris metallic copper and inscribed with symbols.
"Travellers have mentioned it," Horeb confirmed, "mostly as somewhere to avoid. There is a tribe there, they say, who sacrifice strangers to the great eye of their god."
He gave her a sidelong look.
"That is not what we are here to steal, is it?"
"We steal nothing," she told him.
"And as for the eye of the silver god..."
But her voice trailed away, and she did not finish the thought. Instead, she suggested,
"Let's camp here and drive down in the morning. The trees are huge and far apart. I think Achimait can make the terrain."
Horeb gave her a knowing smile.
"And you want to see this place at night?"
She gave him a tired, old grin.
"You know me too well, Pharaoh of Waset."
So they set a fire before the tracks of Achimite and gathered about it, all except the clicker. Devi sang for them. She had a clear, sad voice and many songs in her own tongue. Then Tankhilda told one of her stories, full of alliteration and rhythm, and she mixed in elements from her early life among the Norse with fragments of Wasette's history. And Horeb, feeling all the little aches that age is heir to, relaxed beside Isabel and contemplated the value of a life well lived, a legacy well established, and good old friends about him. After dark, they saw what Isabel had plainly expected. Deep in the ruined city, there was light. Not firelight, but a flickering, whitish glare that glimmered through the trees from the shattered face of one of the fallen towers. "Now we know where we must go, to where the silver god keeps his temple."
"Is that electricity?" asked Devi.
Some of Isabel's innovations back in the colony ran off this bottled lightning, and Isabel had made machines that created it from the flow of water. It was rationed, though. The water purification plant, a few other necessities, and some pet projects. The stuff was powerful and valuable. It should not be emanating from the heart of an overgrown ruin. The travellers stared into the dark of the forest, at the artificial radiance that danced and changed colour before their eyes.
"Powerful, this god of theirs," Devi remarked.
Hilda grunted.
"No tales of the ruined dweller's silver god have mentioned this."
"No, this is new these last 2 years, and Horeb knew that this newness, whatever it was what she had sensed back in Wasette. And what they were here to steal.
The sacred fire of the silver god.
It seemed an appropriately mythic thing to steal the treasure of a false deity before finally accepting that he was too old for heroics. They slept, and the clicker kept watch. It lurked just within the hatch of Achimite, its serrated limbs folded to its body. Stalked eyes scanning all directions at once. The clicker could see in the dark as though it were noon, and it did not need to sleep. In the morning, Achimite began the descent into the canyon, tracks grinding cautiously over the uneven ground. When she had first come to Wasette, early on, she had burned what Isabel called fossil fuels. Later, such fuel had become scarce or gone strangely off, and Achimite had fallen silent, set to become a metal memorial to the early defence of the township. Then the horse people had come raiding and burning, threatening to destroy all that they had built. And so Horeb had gone to beg Isabel. He, the pharaoh, kneeling before his own vizier. And she had made the sacrifice and dismantled the final part of her internal mechanisms that she could spare, to give Achimite life, a life that would outlive them all. Horeb had taken the tank and broken the horse people. When he returned in triumph, the people of Wasette had cheered Achimite as much as they had cheered him, and he had not begrudged the adulation. Since then, the tank had seemed to him like a faithful hound. A broad stream ran through the canyon, swelled by dozens of brooks that emerged from cracks in the rock walls. Isabel mused,
"I wonder what we might find if we opened the cliffs up.
Buried cities? Buried bodies?" Horeb guessed she did not mean caves or tombs or anything so wholesome. The passage to Duat had been traumatic and continued to be so. Devi went scouting ahead and now came back in a hurry.
"Great lizards,"
she announced. Tankhilda swore and dropped down into Achimite's interior, elbowing the clicker to give her room.
"What kind?" Isabel asked from her perch atop the tank. "Like the beast that came to Wasette last summer?"
Smaller, but more of them. Maybe 30, Devi reported. All of them as big as Ahimite.
Horeb rolled his shoulders, trying to grind the last 20 years out of them.
Killers?
Plant eaters with those numbers? Isabel guessed. Go slow. We don't want to stampede. Hilda shifted the vehicle into a lower gear, and they pressed on through the trees until Horeb saw the beasts. They were huge and grey-green, save a few which had bright crests and backs. They stood on four legs, or rose up on two to strip branches bare of leaves. Most of the great lizards he'd seen near Waset were starved, their teeth destroyed by the grass. These looked fat and healthy. He pondered the wisdom of a hunt. He'd brought his big rifle, and it would be a shame not to use it. The clatter of Achimite's tracks, the squeal and rattle of her parts, was spooking the herd, though. They raised heads topped with long, backward-sweeping crests, and hooted at one another anxiously. And then they lumbered off into the trees, belching and bellowing like offended old women. Horeb laughed, which felt good.
An adventure. We've needed this.
These 10 years we have, she agreed. Even though they were here for some serious purpose, she was grinning like a girl again. Later that day, they passed the first of the fallen towers, and Horeb marvelled. It must have stood 500 feet high, and was made of a chalky stone, shot through with metal ribs, now bared to the air, curling and rusting where the cracks exposed them. What struck him most were the windows. Each face of the tower had been little more than a mounting for glass upon glass. Even now, Achimite's tracks crunched and ground over a carpet of worthless gems that the undergrowth forced its way out of. There was some sign of habitation in the recent past. Cold hearths built on the walls of the toppled rooms. Crude images scratched or painted within. They saw no people, but they had some distance before they neared the tower that had been lit up. Horeb guessed that the miracle of electricity had drawn everyone, which meant many small tribes might have just become one strong one. As always, his thought was, will this threaten us? But Waset was a long way east. He must hope that the Silver God people fragmented and fought among themselves rather than becoming another power, like the horse people had been. That night, they saw the glimmer of the lamps through the trees and heard the yells and the whoops of the Silver God people.
We are in their territory now. They will find us soon.
And past midnight, there was a racket that woke them all, a furious clacking from the clicker as it identified some threat and warned it off. Horeb found human footprints there, some bare and some crudely shod. The locals were aware of their guests.
So, are we going to war or talk?
Tankhilda asked in the morning. She had been up before any of them, save the clicker, and her pale skin was covered with tracks of oil and grease from maintaining Achimite. The young Horeb would have said war and expended what they had of their precious ammunition, not to mention blood. This older man, 2 decades of rule behind him, decided differently, though.
Look first, then talk if we can. Isobel, I don't think the Silver God's people will speak the tongue of the Nile.
Isobel had a pensive look.
I think I know the language they will speak. I think it will be close to my own.
You know them?
Let us go look,
she repeated, and then insisted that she be among the scouts, though she was the oldest and the slowest. Devi would lead, of course, and Horeb placed himself in the party as well, leaving Hilda in charge of Achimite and the camp. He would have taken the clicker, but the creature had proven too volatile for scout work in the past, reacting to threats that were just in its half-metal mind. It was best left in its familiar den in the tank. Devi threw on her cloak of many colours, which had been a trophy from the horse people. When she passed through the forest, it shifted and changed to show the trees through her, so that even within arm's reach, Horeb could lose her, then see her again as she moved. She was no longer young either, her bound-back hair grey as iron. She moved smoothly as water, though, supple as a youth from the elaborate exercises she worked through each morning. She led them through the trees without hesitation. They came upon more of the great lizards, but the huge browsers barely noticed them, oblivious to the scent of a species evolved millions of years after their extinction. After that, they were approaching the fallen tower, whose empty windows had blazed with light. Horeb expected some great civilized endeavour there, some people from a time when miracles of science were commonplace. Instead, the great broken structure was festooned with lean-tos and shelters and makeshift tents where a host of pallid people lolled and squabbled. They seemed not only crude but transient, as though they would any day have some better home to move on to. They were a half-starved looking people, most of them pale as fish bellies, and alike enough that Horeb guessed them to be kin rather than the melting pot of peoples that formed Waset.
Who are they? They are the city builders. They built these towers?
Their people did, yes. I know them.
Of your time?
Before. You may yet meet another of my lineage, Horeb, but we were not many. We lived lives of great power and understanding, like little gods. But we were always few. Then Devi hissed for silence, and they crouched lower in the undergrowth, watching. Dominating the grandest open chamber of the tower, visible through the glass-toothed emptiness of its open front, there was some manner of something. Horeb thought it might be an idol, or perhaps it was a machine, or just some abstract sculpture. It had 100 glassy square eyes, stacked on top of each other to form a great bank of vacant, staring lenses. Many were cracked, some staved in altogether, but the monument must have been 3 men high and twice that again in width. And it was shimmering with a fluid greyness. Horeb thought his eyes were playing tricks, but then bands of light began strobing across first one eye and then many, flickering and dancing just as the light had the night before. The pale dwellers were leaping up and gathering hurriedly before the array. Many held their hands out begging. Others were crouched low in reverence and awe. Images began to shudder piecemeal across the glass facets. Horeb saw human figures, most as pale as the dwellers, but dressed in elegant raiment. They talked, they drank from impossibly delicate glasses, and ate sumptuous meals. They fought with blades, with fists, with machines. They made love. They strode through fantastical landscapes where towers like this broken hulk stood tall and sheathed in silvered glass. And the pale dwellers gasped and cried out and reached for those momentary riches. And some even tried to push their hands through the glass to grasp what they could only see and never touch.
The silver god. What does it promise them?
Nothing. We've seen enough. Let's go. After some persuasion, Isabel agreed to gift the dweller's language to any ambassadors Horeb should send. It is not unlike my own language. Some degenerate version of it. Horeb chose Devi to go. Giving his best thief a close look at the dweller's stronghold could not go amiss. Isabel was curiously withdrawn as he gave his orders. After he had given his emissary her instructions, Horeb went to where she sat at the edge of their campsite.
Talk to me, he suggested.
They remind me of how things were
in your time
and the days that led to it. Terrible things, Pharaoh.
and I was a terrible person.
I cannot believe that.
Her smile was despairing. You did not know me then. You barely know me now.
I trust you. You have made Wasset great. None has given more than you.
None has owed such a debt. And it is still not paid. You and I, we have built something worthwhile in Wasset. But there is one gift yet I can give.
The thing we have come here for. You said this was a personal matter.
It's both. It is what gives their god its power. And she was about to say more when the clicker began rattling about within Achimite as though someone was boiling it in a pan. Horeb jumped up and leapt for his rifle, even as the first spear arced overhead and shattered against Achimite's invulnerable hide. Without warning, there were pale dwellers all about them, thin men with streamers of coloured cloth or feathers at their necks, wielding glass-studded clubs and spears. Horeb shot one dead, and the sound of the rifle cowed them long enough that he could get his sword and shield in hand. He braced himself as they rushed in numbers that would overwhelm him in an instant, but then Achimite gave a great rumbling cough, and their courage faltered again. He saw Isabel break across towards him, hobbling as fast as she could go. The dwellers set up a great howling and hollering and then launched into the attack. Horeb tried to cut a path towards her, lopping a pallid hand off at the wrist, letting their weapons shatter on the steel of his shield. Achimite's turret ground about, seeking targets.
Clicker! Get out here! Leave the driving to Hilda!
He was almost at Isabel where she was crouching on the ground, hands protecting her head, when a club smashed into his ribs, beating the breath from him, though his stab vest and the mail beneath it took the brunt. His sword was torn from his hand and a savage, white face thrust at him, babbling that harsh language. He took hold of the dweller's bright halter and shook the man until his teeth rattled, and then cast him aside. His hand had found a club by then, and he lashed out at the rest, trying to clear a path to Isabel. The clicker finally emerged from within Achimite, surging down the tank's side and buzzing angrily at having to leave its burrow. It was a segmented thing, half again as long as a man, with a clutch of appendages below its eyes. Some of those limbs were spears, and some were clubs, and it could strike faster than the eye could see. It clung to Achimite's tracks and decapitated a half dozen dwellers in a blurred flurry of movements. It was part machine, Isabel had said, and part mantis shrimp, and it must have been made in a time that even she did not know. Some time when wars were fought with such bioengineered monsters. And yet, it thought. When Isabel had finally spoken to it, in the lair where they had found it, she touched a metal mind that still knew things like loneliness and duty. The dwellers did not like the look of the clicker and eddied away from it. Immediately, it was amongst them, flowing down from its perch and striking in a staccato rhythm, breaking limbs and heads and driving them back. It crossed to Horeb, whose silence vanished away at its approach. He put a grateful hand on the warm metal of its carapace and got himself to his feet. Then Achimite ground forward to the trees, and her great gun spoke. It was not the original 3-inch gun she had been made with, but a cannon of another era, for which Wasset could manufacture ammunition and powder. Still, her voice was grand enough to scatter all the surviving dwellers and send them fleeing back towards their ruined tower. In the echo of that great retort, Horeb saw that Isabel did not lie amongst the slain dwellers where he had last seen her. She had been dragged away by the retreating tide. The locals had her. Soon after, Devi returned, her attempt at diplomacy already forestalled. She had narrowly avoided capture herself, and only her cloak of many colours had let her escape. He had wanted to be an adventurer, and not a soldier on this quest, but his enemies apparently had different designs. The dark part of him
that had thrilled to see the enemies of the Pharaoh humbled, that had been tempered always by Isabel's advice, came to the fore, and he began to plan his assault. The Electric Eye of the Silver God was written by Adrian Tchaikovsky and performed by Dion Winton Pollock. You can find the story in This Twisted Earth, a shared world anthology from 6 minutes to midnight. Copyright 2016. Links to the author, the publisher, and the book can be found in the show notes, along with attributions for the music and sound effects used. The Electric Eye of the Silver God was a Fine-Toothed Comb production.